Welcome to the Buyer's Desk, your weekly resource for all things natural food retail.
This season, we're shaking things up with shorter weekly episodes to fit your busy schedule.
Each month, we dive into SPINS data, explore trends with industry leaders, spotlight emerging brands, and share actionable strategies to help you thrive.
Get ready to explore the world of natural food retail.
Hey, folks, and welcome to the Buyer's Desk. My name is Chris Sorensen, and I am your host for today's episode. This month, we're diving into animal welfare and what that really means, how it's regulated, and why it matters to both consumers and farmers. You know, with ongoing shifts in regulations, consumer demand for ethical sourcing, and these challenges that we're facing both at retail and that the independent farmers are pretty dramatic. So it's more important than ever to understand where our food comes from, the impact it has, and especially the impact on the animals. So joining us today is Nick Westby, the founder of Organic Pastures, Wisconsin's first certified humane pasture-raised organic egg producer. Nick and his team are raising the bar for animal welfare while navigating the ever-changing egg market. Hey, Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me. Super excited to get talking with you.
Yeah, likewise. So, Nick, I just wanted to start out, like, we started following each other on LinkedIn, you know, quite a while ago. And I just have to say, I love seeing the videos you post of, quote unquote, the girls running around outside and all the pictures on the farm. You know, you seem very passionate about your family, the farm and everything like that. So I love seeing the authenticity that comes through on LinkedIn. So I just have to say, I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah. It's definitely what we like lean into, like small family farm story. And just like my wife and I being the actual like kind of farmers, like we're on the farm every day and just kind of leaning into that like small brand story kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think you do have a pretty great story about how you got in the industry. So I would love for you to tell our listeners about that. But first, can you tell us about the blue eggs that I've seen on the shelf from your farm?
Yeah. We've got blue and green and white and brown. And we call them like our heirloom eggs. They come from like heritage breed or heirloom breed chickens that lay all kinds of different colors. There's some challenges with them, but they're a lot of fun and just something unique. Like we always kind of be different. And it's just something different that stores can have on their shelf versus just like a brown egg or a white egg. It just kind of keeps consumers interested in what we're doing.
Right. Yeah. And with Easter coming up, you can go right for organic eggs and not even need to do any dyeing.
Right. Yeah. No. No food color, no food dyes. Yeah. Good to go.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into farming? Because you started at a pretty young age.
Yeah. So kind of funny, like I did not grow up farming at all. Like I grew up in a small town, always outdoors, but really big into sports and like kind of hunting, fishing, outdoor stuff, but never farming. And my high school basketball coach had a cage, like a pretty big, like cage-free chicken farm that was kind of my summer job. And then I went to college for like 2 years, dropped out, started working on that farm full time. And all while kind of working on that farm, I was kind of looking at like what other people were doing, like further out, like nationwide and like see like the vital farms of the world, like doing this like pasture-raised egg farming. And kind of looked around, like nobody was doing it in Wisconsin. Very many people were doing it in the Midwest. And just kind of talking to my wife, and in the evenings, I was kind of working on like building this brand, trying to find like a farm near where we grew up, and stumbled upon some land. And about 5.5 years ago, well, coming up on 6 years now, we bought our first property and built the barn ourselves and started with just our brown, like our pasture-raised organic brown eggs. Locally, like farmers markets, Willie Street Co-op, like stores in Madison, like Metcalf's. And that just kind of over the last several years, just kind of expanded. And now kind of what makes nationwide at the likes of like the Infra Stores, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Market on the East Coast. Yeah. So it's kind of our story. And we've kind of kept it like that small farm, small family story. Like my wife and I are on the egg carton. Or the ones in all the social media, like it's actually chickens on our cartons. Like there's no like clip art. Like you'll see a lot of other like egg companies have like clip art chickens out there. It's like, well, like we actually show our actual farm. So that's been really fun. But then, yeah, like my wife and I are still like 100% owners. We've kind of created like a co-op of farmers. We have about, I think it's like 13 or 14 other farms now that we work with like locally. And we've kept everything like super local, like all the farms, like an hour and a half, 2 hours, so that we can kind of stay connected with them and kind of know what's going on and whatnot. So yeah, that's kind of our story.
That's awesome. No, that's great to hear. Cause I think when you think about animal welfare, you think about, you know, this local, the smaller farms, that's how you can control that. So I think diving into that a little bit more, you know, you guys are, like we said, certified humane, organic, pasture raised. And the thing I love too, that, you know, when I was a retailer, I used the Cornucopia Institute scorecards all the time. I looked up your guys' scorecard, you're 5 out of 5 eggs, which we love to see. But not only that, is your the points that you guys have from the surveys that you do from Cornucopia, you have the highest point score for any nationwide egg company. And that's a pretty huge thing to kind of tout that you guys are able to do that on a national scale. But what I want to know, with all those accolades, what does that actually mean for the hens and their eggs?
Yeah, I mean, it basically just comes down to like the environment that the chicken's in and kind of what they get to do on a daily basis. Because like, if you think of, you know, you've got like the cleage-free eggs, you've got the free-range eggs, and like the pasture-raised eggs, you've got like the conventional eggs. Like kind of each tier you go up, they have more freedoms, more kind of things that they're able to do. And then we kind of, I guess, take it a step further of add things like throughout the pasture, like, or like even in the barn, like, cause I mean, we live in like most all of our farms are in Wisconsin. So in the winter, it gets kind of hard to, cause like, I mean, it snows and whatnot. So like, we'll plow out paths in the pasture for the chickens and lay out, like, we've been doing a lot of like round bales, and we'll like roll out the round bales, like throughout like the pasture to kind of give them that grass, a whatever, like throughout the winter as well. But it's just see the environment of the chickens, like what they're able to do, just as far as like things in the barn, like it goes down to like the perching and like how much feed they have available to them. And like just with certified humane, like they're like, we have our like yearly inspections that and we actually have our yearly inspection is tomorrow on our farm. So we've kind of been ready for that, getting all our paperwork, whatnot for them. But yeah, basically it just comes down to the life of the chicken, because they are, like, a lot of people will like, oh, like chickens are dumb and like yada yada yada, like they don't like do anything, but like they like legit have personalities, and like seeing them in an environment like where they want to be, like where they can go outside all that they want, and then they've also got like sheltered from like storms and predators and whatnot. Yeah, it's kind of just all that kind of mixed into one, I suppose.
So out of the chickens, you said they all have like pretty strong or different personalities. What are some of the like unique or like quirky things? Cause you know, like with people that like have dogs that like love the little quirks and stuff with their dogs, what are some of your favorite things about the chickens?
Yeah, like we have one chicken that, and we've actually kept this chicken for, we've had her for like five and a half years, like one of the first flocks we had. And we live on our original farm still, and we, like, every day, like, this chicken would be, like, go back up to the barn at night, but, like, come in our house is about, I don't know, three quarters of, or, like, a third of a mile from the barn, and she would come down to our house every single day, like, hop up, like, on our, like, windowsill outside and, like, peck at, like, the window and, like, basically, like, every morning, like, come in, like, greet us and say hi. So that's one of them. Like, we've just like had her forever, and now we have her just by the house, like, and she's just like our pet, basically. Like, she doesn't even lay eggs anymore. Like, she just like hangs out and just kind of like our pet now. So, but yeah, like that's one of them. And like, you'll have like specific chickens, and like, you can kind of tell, I mean, get a lot of chickens, like, it's hard to tell like each single one, but like, you can kind of start telling like ones, like little, like you're walking out like in the pasture and like, like the same ones will come up and like start pecking at you, or like they like pecking at your shoes and whatnot if you've got like the design on your shoe. So yeah, just like different things like that. And like, I mean, there are like the super timid chickens that you kind of like have to like watch out for, because chickens at the end of the day, they can be mean to each other, like just personality wise. Like there's ones that like really rule the roost, like per se. So they kind of have to like watch out for those ones. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different like personalities, like kind of like humans, basically. There's a couple that are like have like a special place in our heart for sure.
Well, I have to ask the name of the chicken that kept coming up to the house.
So her name is Ruth. And my wife like named her. Nora was another one that was like one of like our like favorites. He like passed away like a year ago. We name a few of them. I mean, you get quite a few chickens in and out, so we can't like name them all, but they're certainly our favorites for sure.
Cool. I love that. Well, I think that's a good segue into talking maybe a little bit more about regenerative practices then as well, because beyond any certification, I know that's something that you guys really emphasize. So can you talk us through what that kind of looks like on the farm and how that can impact the animals and especially the land?
Right. Yeah, for sure. So we're not certified regenerative yet. It's definitely something that we're looking at doing. We're kind of looking at a couple different companies to kind of partner with and do that. But we have our practices ready. I mean, it's kind of funny, like regenerative has been like a term for the last like year or two now that's been like super popular. But we haven't changed our practices in the last like 5 years. It'll be something that we've done. But it just gets into like how we farm. Like we do everything like locally. So we don't have like a huge like footprint. Like all of our like feed gets grown locally, like from farmers that we actually give the manure, like the chicken manure off farm. I mean, we do a little bit of like crops ourselves, but 95% of it is grown elsewhere. And we'll actually we have a couple like local farmers that produce organic feed for us. And they'll actually take all the manure off the farm, use it to grow the crops for us and kind of like a cycle. But then we do like a lot of like rotations with like a chicken. Like we have a stationary barn. We don't have like where like you'll see like a lot of like the hoop house like kind of styles for like meat production primarily, where they'll like move it around. So like it's a little bit harder for us. So like we have like set pens per se that the chickens can go out to. And we'll kind of rotate that around to kind of grow things. But then another thing we've gotten really into, like we started last year, is we have like our set like feed that we get from like the feed mill for the chickens to like get all like the necessary like nutrients that they need. But then we've actually like started rotating crops like throughout the pasture. Like we'll have like one paddock be like rye, like the next one will be like oats or field peas and like different things like that, that like we'll give it like a month or so rest, and they'll come out here, they'll eat whatever, go to the next one, eat whatever, and kind of do that like rotational grazing in a way, like with stationary barns that we have.
That's awesome. No, it's, I think it's something you said, I've heard from a lot of farmers that I've talked to on this show, is we've been doing regenerative for a long time. And now that there's a certification, is it worth the money and who do we go to? So it's good to hear that that's something that you're looking into. Cause yeah, I think there are consumers out there looking for that. And so it's, they want some of that level of transparency of like, where the practice is at, which obviously you have it in droves already. I think I can't talk to an egg farmer without bringing up the egg market and like all the major shifts that have been happening with avian flu outbreaks, price fluctuations, increasing demand. How have all of these factors affected your farm? And what do you see as some of the biggest challenges for farmers like yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually been like super, super difficult for us, like as a farmer, like as like a brand producing eggs for these stores, because we've always been like a reasonably priced pasture-raised organic egg. Like we're not like 10, normally like $10, like we're always around like $5 to $7, which is like a pretty good value for what we're able to provide, like a five egg score from Cornucopia, like the highest score rating points wise. And we've always been a value. So now that the conventional like white eggs are more than ours, stores have just like their orders have just like gone through the roof. Like we can't keep up with what's going on. And like we have a set price. Like we don't really, like we can increase our price and it takes 90 to 120 days to get on the shelf. But like, we can't really react to like the egg market going crazy other than we only have a certain amount of eggs. Like we only have a certain amount of farms, certain amount of eggs. And it's been very, very hard to keep up with those orders. And then you get grocery stores that and customers that that grumble because they're not being able to like fill the orders, and that's been super stressful. We've added farms. We just actually completed a farm on our own, which we just built, and we're trying to kind of keep up with that demand. But that's been the hardest thing by far. Luckily, like we've not had any avian influenza, like AI, on our farms or anywhere, like any farms like kind of near us. But it's just that total market that when our eggs are, sometimes when you go to a grocery store, like our eggs are the cheapest eggs on the shelf. And that's probably our fault as far as like not getting ahead of it and like increasing our price. But we also didn't want to take this opportunity to start gouging people. Like, I mean, we have our set prices, like we have our contracts with our farmers, and that's kind of just where we've kept things.
So it's been very, very difficult to just navigate all that, because we wanna add on, we wanna like continue to like support like these stores, but knowing 6 months from now, 8 months from now, who knows when the market's gonna go completely opposite, and we don't wanna get to a point, because we have those farmer relationships, we don't want to get to a point where we're like, okay, well, we've got all these farmers now, and now our orders are way less. And now we figure out like, okay, well, this farmer, like we can't buy these eggs anymore. So that's kind of where we've been cautious of like really supporting our farmers and knowing long-term that we're going to have the sales before we go out and get more farmers.
Yeah, that makes sense. The interesting thing too, that what you're saying there is, so you guys weren't affected necessarily by the sickness that has been going around in the country. But what's been impacted is the people that are maybe not farming and taking care of the animals and having the issues, them going away out of the market is causing this influx. And it's just fascinating that now, you know, all the work that you do has become, you know, something that provides stability, you know, to the market in a sense. So if more people were doing what you're doing, is what I'm getting at, is we would have probably less of this egg fluctuation in the market going on. So can you kind of speak to like some of that you're seeing?
Yeah, definitely, like to a point. I mean, like if you have more smaller farms, the threat of AI is less. I mean, if you have all your eggs in one basket, like no pun intended, in one big barn, I mean, if that barn gets avian influenza, like that full farm is pretty much shut down for like a year. And by the time you get all the like everything like cleaned out, sanitized, and then you like the hardest part is like ordering chicks, getting the chicks raised to pullets, and then getting like egg laying hens in again. It's like a year. So a lot of like what we do is we have a lot of small farms versus like one big farm. And that way you can kind of spread that risk of bird flu out, because if you were, I mean, we've not had it on any of our farms, but if one farm were to get it, it's only 5%.
It's isolated.
Versus 100% of the production is just gone and out. And that's kind of how we farm. Like that's kind of what we do. Like that's our like kind of consumer that we're really trying to focus on. I mean, I'm not going to be oblivious or whatever you want to call it to, you know, we need a lot of those bigger farms for the more conventional markets. And like there is that customer that needs to have cheap food and whatever. And like, we just kind of play in a completely different lane. Like I'm not gonna like bash those people. Like, I mean, that like they have their own kind of thing to do, but that's just not what we do. And it's not like the consumers that we're kind of looking for. And the people that we work with, the grocery stores that we work with, for the most part, don't have a lot of those conventional eggs anyway. So, and that's kind of where we're at. Like it's, I understand the need for bigger farms. I mean, maybe it would be smarter rather than having a million birds in one barn, you have 100,000 birds. I mean, it's still way bigger than what we would ever do, but at least you can kind of like spread that risk around of getting it. But then who's to say what's the right way or what's the wrong way? But we kind of stay in our lane and we do what we do.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. It's a good perspective to have. Like, yeah, everyone has a part and a place. And I think what you said there too is there are probably some practices that conventional farmers could take from what you're doing to learn from the situation we're in to not have it happen again. I would also assume that because this situation happened, like you said, more consumers have tried your eggs and, you know, bought your eggs than probably ever would have before. So there's probably some, you know, maybe people you've converted over because of this scenario and start to understand, oh, this is a better egg. It does taste better. Because I think that all comes from what chickens are fed, how they're treated, and all of that. So yeah, I appreciate that perspective and also see that, you know, the opportunity too for just the whole industry to kind of reflect on what's happening.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. For sure.
Well, I want to kind of dive a little bit into kind of the education. So, you know, when shoppers, you know, you kind of keyed into this, look at like the cage free or the pasture raised, they don't necessarily know the difference. You kind of talked about this like a spectrum, I think is how you said it. What do you wish more people understood about egg labeling and then that real impact of their choices that ultimately impact the animals?
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, you've got like the conventional eggs, typically like a white, typically like a white egg. And like those barns are, or those chickens are like stuffed in barns millions at a time, kind of in cages. Like they don't even, I mean, they can't really move around. Move around like a little bit, but like, basically stuck in like a small cage, like the size of like a crate, basically. And then you've got like the cage free, which is primarily always in a barn. Really big barns, million, like could be up to millions of birds in a barn, but they can at least like move around, like somewhat be chickens. And then you've got the free range, which is that plus, if we're looking at like sort of humane standards, they're also needing basically like a patio outside per se. Like it's 2 square foot per chicken of like outdoor space that they can go to. A lot of times it's just like dirt. And the problem with that is that you've got so many chickens, like they need more space than just like 2 square foot. Because like what happens like a lot like that we kind of deal with on our farm, like having a stationary barn, the first like 20, 30 feet outside the barn, it's very, very hard to like grow vegetation. So like a lot of times we'll bring in sand and it's kind of like a scratch area. Like chickens can like they love to like dust bathe basically. So like we kind of have like our first like 20, 30 feet like sand and like kind of gravel. So it doesn't just become like a muddy mess basically. And then further, that's when they can get into like the fruit trees. And like we have like a new barn, like that's actually like in like a wood lot. So it'll be super cool. Like we just got the chickens. It's going to be really cool. Like there'll be a bunch of stuff on social media about eating all the acorns. And like we've like kind of planted some different like trees. And then we'll have like strips of different kind of like small grains, like the oat and the barley and whatnot, and kind of rotate that around so the chickens can kind of eat that like naturally versus just like in their feed. And then, so yeah, I guess I got a little bit sidetracked there, but that was kind of talking about our next step into like the pasture raised, which is 108 square foot per chicken. So it's like 50 times more than like the free range, which really gives a chicken like, is that it gets outside of that like that little patio that they have that would just turn into like dirt, mud, whatever. That's where you really get the chickens like being able to be chickens and do what they want to do. And there's some people that are like kind of say it's only like access or whatever. And like, and that's why we show videos and pictures of our farm. Like you can see what we have going on. Like the one farm, like our whole farm is like right off the highway. Like people are like, oh, like there's so many chickens outside. Like that's like so cool. Cause like, I mean, we were always told like farming, like when I was like working on like the cage free farm, we were always told that like all the chickens are never going to go outside. They're never like, they want to be inside. And that's true. Like, so, I mean, some chickens like being inside, like there's probably chickens that never really like they'll venture out a little bit, but like they just want to be by their food and lay their egg and hang out, whatever. I do a lot of like deer hunting. So like I have trail cameras on the other side of the property, half a mile, 3/4 of a mile away from like the barn, and you can, or a third of a mile, half a mile away from the barn, and you could, like, I get pictures of the chickens on the trail camera. Wow. So it's like, I know they go out, like they for sure like go out and it's really cool, but that's kind of where pasture raised comes into. And it's kind of hard. And I think that's why you have to really, as a consumer, like a grocery store, like you kind of have to really know
on, like you have to really like know the farmer. And I think that's like what it kind of comes down to, because there are definitely like loopholes in different things, like with like the pasture, like the pasture is like, there's a lot of companies that have big barns, like big, and then it's pasture raised just because of like what the certifications are. So you kind of have to be careful of like, and know who you're buying it from and like kind of see like actual farms. It comes down to like, just most of the time, just buy from people that you know, and like you can actually see, basically.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think that's why I wanted to bring in Cornucopia too, because, you know, there's the certification. Cornucopia being kind of like this watchdog, having these additional scorecards is another layer of transparency to, if you can't come out to Wisconsin, which I can from Minneapolis here, probably drive out and see your farm. So I haven't got an invite yet, Nick. Do you have people come out to your farm? And
yeah, we'll have to work on that. Yeah, we've had a decent amount of retailers come out. We've been a little bit more careful the last like year or so with like bird flu, of just, I mean, try to limit like people coming out. And I mean, we try to be as careful as we can. I mean, our chickens are still going outside, but we try to be a little bit more careful. But yeah, I mean, definitely in the future, we're talking about having kind of like a different like retailer days, like where we buy a bunch of retailers out and different people come out.
Well, when that happens, I want to come out and meet you, your family, and of course, Ruth.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. Nick, well, I appreciate you coming on the show today and talking about your farm and everything. Is there anything that we didn't cover today that you would like our listeners to know?
No, other than just we're doing our best to kind of manage through this like egg industry, like bag market right now, of trying to keep stores as stocked as possible. It's been kind of hard, but I hope stores can kind of understand the situation that we're in. And I mean, at the end of the day, like buying and selling like loads like of eggs like on the wholesale market and whatnot. So like we've got our set farms, and that's kind of what we do. And in times like this, we fill what we can do, and we, at the end of the day, that's kind of, we do our best. So,
well, and you guys do a great job. And I think I can speak for the folks here at Infra and our retailers. We really appreciate people like you and the work that you do, and doing it the right way and treating the animals with, you know, kindness and respect and giving them what they need. So I loved hearing that. And it's clear that we need to focus on animal welfare and the commitment to doing things the right way. And that's, you know, even when the market's tough, we got to do that. So really appreciate the work that you and your family and your cooperative of farmers are putting into this. It's huge.
Yeah, no, thank you so much.
Hello, my name is Eric Gutknecht, the CEO and founder of Charcut Nouveau Organic and Natural Sausage. I'm joined by Gary Stevens, our Director of Retail Sales and Advocate of Regenerative Organic Agriculture.
At Charcut Nouveau, we believe in creating delicious, high-quality sausage that are not only good for you, but also good for the planet. Our sausages are crafted using environmentally conscious farming practices that restore soil health, enhance biodiversity, reduce carbon footprint, and support human health and well-being. We manufacture our 100% grass-fed and grass-finished, regenerative organic certified beef sausages at our own sausage facility in Denver, Colorado.
Our sausages are not just a treat for your taste buds, but also a step towards a healthier, more sustainable future. We love our partnership with Infra and look forward to continuing to build on this relationship.
To learn more about our regenerative organic certified sausages and to join us in our mission for a better world, visit our website at charcutnouveau.com or follow us on social media. Charcut Nouveau Natural Organic and Regenerative Organic Sausage is committed to our mission of being cleaner, kinder, better.
As we wrap up this episode of The Buyer's Desk, we'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the incredible Infra staff, contributors, dedicated independent retailers, and visionary natural food brands and business partners that made this episode possible.
Stay tuned for more inspiring insights and stories in the world of natural food retail. Until next time, thank you for your support. Angela Bozo, co-host and administrator.
Chris Sorensen, co-host and producer.
Kim Rout, executive producer and segment contributor.
Jim Olson, Spin's segment manager.
Austin Hinkle, audio engineer.
Sarah Super, wellness strategist.
Madeline Ware, marketing writer, editor, and digital manager.
Haley Craig, outreach manager.
Raina Kittredge, segment contributor.
Bella Sislo, outreach manager and segment contributor.